Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com. Coming up in late November is the Catalina Eco Marathon Weekend, the Challenged Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on Babbittville.com. Our next guest, the premier female Spartan racer in the world, 2013 Spartan Race champ, world champion. And besides that, she was just recently on the cover of Runner's World. Amelia Boone joins us. Amelia, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am wonderful. So now you walk around, you're on the cover of a major magazine. How does that change things? And all of a sudden people are like, wait a second, did I just see you on the cover of a magazine?
You know, it's kind of cool. I think the coolest thing is to see like the placement in the newsstands. I'm like, oh, hey, I'm right next to Marky Mark.
Exactly. I love that.
Right.
Hey, so growing up,
yeah.
Softball pitcher, you soccer player, sort of the traditional stuff. And where did you grow up?
I grew up outside of Portland, Oregon.
Okay. And traditional sports?
Traditional team sports. I actually didn't like individual sports because I preferred to, like, if things went poorly, I could blame other people aside from myself.
It seems like the one constant thread is you're a person who's pretty tough on herself.
Yeah, I think so. That would be a fair characterization. I'm much tougher on myself, I think, than anybody else is on me. So, yeah.
So when you were playing soccer or softball, you weren't the type of person to blame the other folks. It was like
you
put it all on you.
Yes. Especially pitching in softball, because you can't really, like, you kind of feel like, you know, that's on you.
It
like
is.
You're bearing that for the team.
Yeah, when you're talking softball, that is the dominant position.
Yeah, yeah.
And then at the same time, in musicals, you're singing in the choir. And there was a point where you basically got away from the sports side and focused more on, you know, on your studies, becoming an attorney.
Yeah.
And was there something about sport where you just felt like, you know what, I think I've had enough of that?
Well, so, I mean, because I was a kid growing up and this was all my own doing because I loved it, but I was, you know, like going from softball practice to soccer tournament, you know, to basketball, and then I was playing golf in the summers, and I was just a constant go, go, go. And I think really by the time I hit 15 or 16, I just started to burn out. So I kind of found the musical niche and focused more on that and started weaning down the sports one by one. And then, you know, went to college and just kind of, I enjoyed the break from like the competitive sports. And I didn't really miss it. I think I found my competitive outlet in like studies, you know, being at the top of my class or being, you know, things like that. And so, it was just, I found a different outlet for it.
So then when you go to law school at University of Washington in Seattle, is that when you sort of got back into that fitness lifestyle a little bit, working out at the gym?
You know, so I had always worked out and I always like stayed in shape, even when I wasn't playing sports, just because it was like a stress release for me.
Right.
You know, I think there's things going around. People said that I hate running or that I hated running and, you know, God bless Runner's World, but that's not exactly a fair characterization. Is that, you know, I always would go out on a run, you know, a few miles just to like stay in shape. I never tracked myself. I never tracked time. I never competed, never raced. But it was just always kind of there in the background. It never really went away. And it wasn't really actually until after law school when I started as an attorney that I started becoming more like focused on fitness and like strength building and CrossFit and things like that. Yeah.
It seems like the CrossFit is perfect because it's competitive working out.
Right? Exactly.
You seem like the type of person who loved to work out, and then, oh, wait a second, I can be competitive too. I can, if I do more burpees than that person, I win?
Yeah, and it's funny. It's actually, it's the same reason. It's so funny. I resisted CrossFit for a long time, just kind of like how I resisted Spartan races for a while. Because when I first started, the first obstacle race I ever did was a Tough Mudder, and I did that on purpose because I didn't want to be timed.
Right.
Because I think I always know, my thing is I know I have this super competitive aspect of me, and I was afraid if I let it kind of rear its ugly head, what would happen? And apparently, this is what happened.
What happened is you became the best in the world. So it's interesting because even though, you know, Tough Mudder, it's okay, it's not competitive. There's no clocks out there. Everybody knows what their place is and at the top of the group, right? And you're doing what the world's toughest mudder, whatever that was, with 10 ridiculous or 10-mile laps and jumping through ice and all that type of stuff. So the competitive side that did rear its ugly head.
Right. And no, it did. It came out, you know, kind of like when I finally gave into CrossFit, that came out as well, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, the nice thing is maybe because you're older, a little more mature, you can handle it. It's like, okay, I know that part comes out. Because I've seen you at the finish of the Spartan races, and the camaraderie among the gals is pretty special. I mean, it's obviously you all want to win. You all want to kick the other person's butt. But I think the purity of those events is you win it on your own. It's not like you're racing a bike where you could draft on somebody and get a benefit and win psychologically. It's the best person, and it's you against the course more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's really interesting is that I was telling somebody this the other day that some of my proudest races from Spartan have been ones that I actually haven't won. They've been ones where I've like fought a really, really hard race against somebody and come up short.
Yep.
But you know, that to me is like I would rather race against a stacked field of all of the top athletes out there and not win or not podium versus, you know, a race where, you know,
there's nobody there.
There's not. Right, exactly.
Yeah. You don't want to go cherry pick.
Like,
you want to go
where
the best. Well, and I think part of that too is, listen, you're an attorney. Right?
Right.
In 2009, you joined a firm, corporate, a bankrupt attorney in Chicago. So, you know, having a real job, for this to be fun, for Spartan, whatever you're doing to be fun, you don't want to go out there and just do it on your own. You want to be side by side with the best people in the world. And if you win, you win. If you don't, it was a heck of a workout.
Right. Yeah. You know, and you live to fight another day, and then next time the chips may fall in your way. But I think that's part of, you know, being what I've kind of come into over these past 3 years doing Spartan Race. I think when I first started, I was like, oh God, I have to win. And if I don't win, like that's not like so after winning in 2013, I kind of got in this mindset, like every time, like if I don't win, people are going to think that, you know, I'm not a great athlete or whatever. And now I'm like, okay, cool. If I go out there and win, that's great. If I don't, that's like, whatever. I'd rather fight a heck of a race against like a stacked field of, female athletes, which is why I keep encouraging women, like, start, I want more and more women to come into this sport.
Absolutely.
Because the more strong athletes that we can get in here, like, you know, the more it grows, and that's fantastic for everyone. It may not be for fantastic for my podium chances, but, you know, like.
Well, but you're that type of person. You want, at the end of the day, You're not quitting the legal profession to go professional as a Spartan racer, and you know. And I know, you know, you potentially are in a position where you probably, with modeling and a few other things, you probably could do that. But it seems like that would put more pressure on you than you have now.
Yeah, I just, you know, and people have asked me about it a lot, and I think that for me, it's really something that I started out in this sport before it was, we could even categorize it as a sport, as a release, as a hobby, as
right.
something that's fun. And I just never really kind of wanted to change that character of it. So as long as they've been able to coexist, I've, you know, been happily doing both.
So when you mentioned that you're, in your mind, the best races that you've had haven't necessarily been wins. So what was the best race you ever had? When you look back on it now, okay, that was the best race. We were side by side the whole time. I remember I had Bear on the other day, and he was telling me there was a race where he and another guy, they passed each other 12 times during the race.
Yeah.
You know, and those are great. And then what I love about what you guys do, if it's a running race, the person who weighs 5 pounds more is usually the person who's not going to win, right? It's the
right.
lighter person
yeah.
who's going to win. And Bear was saying, listen, I'm 150 pounds. I'm racing a 200-pound guy. There are some obstacles
right.
that are good for him. Uphills are good for me. We, you know, we balance each other out, and there's going to be parts of the course where I'm going to be successful, parts where they are,
right.
and that's what makes Spartan Race great.
Yeah.
And that's,
no, I think.
Yeah. And so for you, that's that. I'm sure that's part of the appeal, that you're racing people of different heights, different weight, and their strengths and weaknesses depending on elevation, etc. So what mm-hmm. what are some of the best races you feel you've had?
Oh, man. I mean, I think that in terms of like closest, most fierce competitions,
yeah.
actually, the Montana Spartan just this past
yeah
May,
this year that was a good
Rose
TV show.
Back. I mean, we were literally rolling on top of each other in barbed wire. And we did that one other previous time in Washougal last August, where it was the exact, it was actually, it might have been even a closer race.
Yeah.
Those are just like, you can't really replicate that kind of intense feeling that you get in those moments. And, you know, so I think that those may not be the best races in terms of it came down to that I missed my spear throws.
Yeah.
But in terms of like adrenaline and excitement, you know, that's really been there.
That's cool.
That's been pretty cool.
The other thing I love about watching Spartan, and as I went to outside of Allentown at the ski resort there recently,
yeah.
is the camaraderie that I mentioned in terms of, especially among the women, it just seems like that you guys genuinely like each other and support each other mm-hmm. and push each other, but also the relationship between the pros and the age group folks who are just mm-hmm. trying to get to this thing before dark. Right.
These are tough
events.
Right.
How important is that whole camaraderie between you and just the average folks that are out there trying to do something that really is going to change their life?
It's fantastic. It's actually probably one of my that and interacting with the kids
yeah.
Is like probably my favorite part about. Like, well, aside from the race itself, but
right.
in Palmerton there, as you said, the other weekend, like, so I finished the race. It was, I love that course, like that a course that plays to my strengths, you know?
Yes.
And so like, it was great and I won, it's fantastic. But then I went back out with some friends afterwards and jumped in like 10:15 PM heat or AM heat. And like, people were like, what? Everybody was saying to me, like, what are you doing, Amelia? I'm like, I'm just out running again for fun.
Getting a little workout.
Like, so I was just out running with people and chatting and meeting people. And it's just so much fun. And it's so cool. You know, it's really cool to hear people's stories too about how they, a lot of people who, you know, have either like great journeys to fitness through losing out a lot of weight through this, or other people that have used racing as a means to like grapple with other demons in their life, you know, or like as a healthy outlet for, whereas they used to, you know, do other things in an unhealthy manner. And so I think to me, that's what's so awesome, is that it's accessible to everyone, whether you're finishing the course in like 55 minutes or in 5 or 6 hours, you know?
So when you look at the world championships up at Lake Tahoe, up at altitude, yeah. You live in Chicago, not quite the altitude capital of the world. if you were an Ironman gal, you'd be in Kona 3 weeks beforehand. You'd right. be, you know, acclimatizing to the heat and the wind, etc.
Right.
In this sport, as a attorney, I'm sure your bosses are like, oh yeah, I don't think you're taking 3 weeks off to go acclimatize to altitude. How do you prepare for an event that's really going to take you in a little different direction than you are in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's a good question. it's interesting. I think racing in Breckenridge a few weeks ago or back in June gave us a good taste of that, even though Breckenridge is way more extreme, for sure.
Right.
We all felt the effects there. It was awful. I was in Tahoe a few weeks ago pacing for the Tahoe 100 miler.
Yeah.
So, I was like, the problem is I wasn't working out at full speed, but I was like, okay, this altitude isn't like, I can kind of feel it, but it's not anywhere near Breckenridge. I think when they announced it was going to be in Tahoe and not Killington, I was like, well, this is going to suck because I can't really get out there to acclimatize.
Right.
But we'll just see what happens. And I think really it's a mental game at that point, is that you can't, if you get it into your head that you are feeling the effects of altitude, then it's easy to get stuck on that. And so I think it's, if anything, it's more just like, all right, this isn't ideal, but
you make lemonade out of it. You just do whatever you have to do. Speaking of making lemonade, I'm sure that the Chicago PD is probably not really happy about people practicing the spear throw in Chicago area. So how do you get, because it's funny, the number of races I've seen that come down to that spear throw.
Right.
Where somebody's leading. I think Bear was telling me he's like leading the race, or he comes up and the other guys are doing burpees. He says, all I got to do is hit the spear. I haven't missed a spear in 10 years, and boom, misses the spear. That's got to be that, even though it's not the most physical obstacle in the world, in terms of the pressure of holding that thing and knowing you've got to hit that target, how do you practice that? Or can you?
I don't.
Go to bars and play darts?
So it's interesting. Last year, actually, after missing spears and losing races from missing spears, I went out, I got a bale of hay, I made a spear. I hid the hay down by the railroad tracks, down by Soldier Field.
Yeah, I know that area. Yeah.
And found this, out-of-the-way area where I could throw a spear. it was kind of close to where I lived, but, still... It was a hassle, and it also was just not ideal at all. And I was practicing and hitting the spear throw every time when I was practicing, but then still missing it in races. So I was like, this isn't helping me at all. Like, I know how to throw a spear. And I was in Salt Lake City actually with Matt, a month or two ago.
Yeah.
And for an entire day, we threw spears. And all day long, I hit it, nailed it every single time. Race the next day, miss it. So I actually just have stopped practicing, and because I know how to throw a spear
right
now, but it really comes down to the mental part of it, I think, for me. One of these days, if I can get a place with a yard, and then maybe I will go pull out and actually devote some time to it, but. For now, it's really at races. It's my spiritual practice.
I love the fact that you had your own private place by Soldier Field. That's wonderful. So, you probably come by there and some guy's using your spear to pick up trash. That's always.
It was down hidden away, the Amtrak trains.
Yeah.
I'd have to watch out so I wouldn't, get hit by a train. And I'm sure people are like, what? This one guy was like, I think there are coyotes over there. And I'm like, I'm not scared of coyotes.
I got a spear. The coyote's going to be scared of me.
Exactly.
So, toughest obstacle, because I'm sure a lot of the Spartan races, they have this, besides a spear, is there an obstacle you come to? Is there an obstacle you come to and go, oh, not this again? Or the one that gives you the most trouble? Huh?
So, there are a few obstacles that are always failure obstacles that always have that chance that you could fail that would make or break a race. I like heavy carries and things like that, so I always look forward to those, like the bucket carries and the long carries and things like that. But it's things like the Z-Walls or the rig that they have.
Yeah.
And actually, surprisingly, my most feared obstacle is actually the log hop. And let me tell you this why. Because it should be really, really easy, a log hop. Like, nobody should fail that. But there's always the potential that you can, like, slip off that log, and you're like, what the hell? I just fell off a log, and now I have to do 30 burpees. And,
right.
like, nobody expects you to fail that obstacle. But it's happened to me before.
Sure.
So it's crazy, actually, that, like, just mentally, how throwing something that's super easy like that in there, but has the potential for failure and, like, make or break in your race, how that can mentally throw you off your game.
So when you're out there and, you know, Rose is in the field, I mean, is there almost a little pecking order where, okay, we're running uphill, I'm going to be in front, or Rose is going to be in front, where you sort of know who is going to be leading at certain parts of the race, or does it pretty much change from race to race?
You know, it really depends on the terrain and things like that. I like to, I generally, I'm not a fast starter. I've never been a fast starter. This is why I don't like sprints.
Yeah.
Because I need 8 or 9 miles to kind of get comfortable. So I generally will be running like 3rd or 4th or 5th or something like that within the first mile. I generally let Rose set the pace if she's there, or KK as well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, for me, it's like in Palmerton, I let them lead. And then as the terrain got more technical, I was like, all right, this is where I come in, you know.
Right.
These are the climbs, and this is where I come in. And so, yeah, there's a bit of that, not gamesmanship, but just kind of playing to what you know your strengths are going to be.
When I look at an athlete like yourself who a little later, you know, comes on as a world-class athlete, right? You weren't a world-class athlete when you were 17 or 18 years old. You're a world-class athlete now. Do you look back and go, you know what? If I had gotten into running or cycling or triathlon back then, who knows what could have happened? I mean, listen, you've got a profession. You're a lawyer, and you're doing this as a hobby, and you're creating great awareness. There's no pressure. Right? You're out there having fun.
Yeah.
But you're obviously a very gifted endurance athlete who could have, you know, if she wanted to, could have been a professional cyclist or runner or mountain biker or any of those things. You ever look back and go, maybe I should have to put those demons about competitive stuff away and gone for it?
You know, I mean, maybe. Like, it's funny. I always joke about how, like, I probably played all the wrong sports growing up. Like, I should have been a volleyball player.
Yes.
I have, like,
basketball.
Super long arms and things like that. Like, softball probably shouldn't have been my sport, but I loved it in terms of how I'm built. But, you know, I really have no regrets because I think that, you know, I never really wanted to be like a super, you know, I never dreamt of being a professional athlete like a lot of kids do. That was never my thing. I always dreamt of being like, you know, an attorney or some big professional bigwig CEO. That was what I wanted when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, it's interesting. I don't think anybody really, I think everybody knew I was kind of like a gifted athlete and that I was pretty good at everything I picked up. But, you know, I don't think it was anything that anybody was like, oh yeah, we should really get her into this or blah, blah, blah. And so
what's interesting is a lot of times people do get into, you know, they find a sport early and then they burn out. I mean, the fact that you love it now, is great. So in a typical week, is there a typical week in terms of how much you train, or is it a lot of that's just predicated on your workload?
You know, I actually do find my life is very kind of ordered and structured to kind of like create some semblance of, you know, order and some chaos.
Right.
But so yeah, my biggest thing is I don't actually have like a long-term training plan. I never have. you know, people, like, it was just, like, last year that I learned what the different types of, like, runs were, you know, like a tempo run.
Yeah. Like this is a fart lick. This is an interval. You're like, oh,
exactly.
I just like, go out and
no
run.
No idea what those things were. I got a Garmin for the first time last year.
Yeah.
So I train every morning. Like, I get up at 4 a.m. because that's the time when I know that I won't be disturbed. Like, you know, nothing's going to come in. Like, if I wait till later on in the day, then I, like, there's potential that I stay at work late or things like that, and it gets in the way. There's generally, I'm at CrossFit probably 4 or 5 times a week, and I'm running, you know, 4 to 5 times a week. Like, you know, and there's overlap between those on some days, and then I'll do like double duty on some days, then I'll take a rest day a week. So it's kind of a mixer and a match. I don't like to be too structured about things. And I've had a lot of people who've tried to get me into more of like a structure, and maybe I could be better if I did that. But for my own sanity, I kind of like, you know, doing what I do.
Yeah, you probably have enough structure with your work. Then you don't have to be, you know, yeah. Is there a distance that's better for you? Is the longer the race, the better for you because of your mental toughness?
So I prefer Beast. I mean, my first Spartan race ever was actually the Ultra Beast, the first Ultra Beast in 2012. So that was...
Did you do Death Race before that?
I did, actually.
You are a crazy person, by the way.
I started with the Death Race, and I worked my way back. I started with the Death Race in 2012, and then I ran my first, like, sprint in, like, late 2013. So, like, I did everything entirely wrong
yeah.
in terms of the distances.
And for our listeners,
you know, like, if they could create a 50-mile obstacle,
you'd be into it.
I would totally be into it.
So for our listeners, when we say death race, give folks a sense of what the heck that is. I always kid Joe DeSena about the death race. I said, Joe, basically, it's the old Huck Finn painting your fence. You've got people chopping firewood for you. You've got people, you know, planting your crops.
Right.
You know, like, hey, this is the best idea ever. People are paying me, and they're doing work on my house.
Yeah, we joke about that too. There's a lot of farm chores. I think the death race is hard to explain to anyone, and it makes no sense unless you can kind of witness it. But really is, you know, it's a race where you have a gear list, you have a packing list, and
right.
sometimes it's really strange things like, you know, an adult diaper or buckskin or, you know, $20 worth of pennies.
Yes.
A Greek dictionary. And you don't really know what you're going to do over the next few days, but you know you're going to be in the woods and you're going to have some tasks. And parts of it will be kind of teamwork. And then the other parts, like a race could start and then you could finish. And sometimes there are winners. Sometimes there are just finishers. You don't know when it's going to end. So if anything, like the death race is like a multi-day, like slog through the woods, that's also like really, really just mental, because at some point you have to question like why you're doing all this, and everybody has a different point to doing it, and everybody gets something out of it that's really cool, you know. I think that like your best and your worst come out
when
you're in that kind of situation, and so it's an experience that's kind of like none other, you know. I don't even know if a race is actually an apt name for it. So,
but you like it?
I loved it, you know, and I love it. I say loved because it's kind of over with. I think that they're retooling it, and or supposedly they're done with the death race. We never really know, but yeah, it's definitely a really neat community of people, especially too.
So down the line, what would you like to see? Joe talks about Spartan getting into the Olympics. What do you see for this sport?
Oh, man. You know, I don't know. I go back and forth. Like, I don't necessarily think that getting in the Olympics is the end-all, be-all in terms of, like, legitimizing a sport.
I agree, by the way, because I've seen it with when beach volleyball and mountain biking got in 1996. I think both sports have gone backwards since. I think it's way too much structure for sports that don't really need that much structure.
Right. Like, I almost see this more as, like, not like really like X Games, but like, it's funny because I also tell people, I'm like, you do realize, like, softball and baseball are not Olympic sports anymore. Like,
right.
So it's, I don't really think that it's necessary to legitimize it. It would be cool. But, you know, what I really see it is that I want to see it stick around, and I want to see people recognize it as, you know, a legitimate endeavor,
yeah,
as opposed to being like, oh, yeah, you just run through the mud on the weekends or things like that. But I see that it could go a few ways. Like, people kind of are talking about how, oh, to make it more popular, you need to make it shorter, make it more like American Ninja Warrior. And I'm like, cool,
yeah,
if that's the direction obstacle racing goes, peace out, because, like, not what I like. I like to run.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we'll see. Like, I think that it could go, I think it's an exciting time right now to see what happens with it. It's kind of cool, like, being on the ground floor and be kind of like that pioneer.
Exactly. We get the coonskin cap out, right?
Exactly.
And what I love is that you're just regular old gal, you know, ketchup, ice cream, gummy bears, gummy worms. You're not like going, oh, I got to get my kale and my tofu and all that type of stuff. You're sort of a normal person.
I was like, no diet plan, no training plan.
Yeah, and then starting is sort of like somebody
would cringe.
Yeah, and then people starting in triathlon going, I'll do Ironman first, and then I'll work my way backwards. I'll do a marathon first. That's you.
Right.
That's Amelia.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm just, you know, all in, right? Go big or go home.
Right. It's kind of like, now I'm kind of getting into, like, just straight. I'm like, all right, well, now I want to do, like, super long races, so let's get into straight ultras. And I'm like, let's find the hardest ones possible. Instead of just, you know, just an easy 100-miler, I'm like, let's just find the most, like, ridiculous one with the biggest elevation gain out there.
So you're running Leadville?
Yeah. They'd let me in. If they would let me in, I'm gunning for it.
Wow. Good for you. Now, do you mountain bike and do a lot of that stuff, too?
You know, I don't. I should. I have this thing about being on my own 2 feet.
Yes. I understand
that. And I've done some mountain biking, and I've taken some really bad hills, and I kind of like to be on my own 2 feet.
I don't blame you.
So,
you know, you don't want to be stuck out in the middle of woods somewhere with a, you know, with flat tires and a broken chain. It's like, hey, if I do something to my leg, I'll figure it out.
Exactly. I'll crawl.
I'll crawl.
But,
I can always do that.
That's the one. People are like, oh, you should get in triathlons. I'm like, a little bit too structured, and I also don't really like the bike.
Well, and way too much equipment. You know, I mean, we're talking, you need a Sherpa to go to the starting line with your bike and your wetsuit and your goggles and your cap and your heart monitor and your someone like yourself measuring calories. Oh, I better take in 200 calories an hour. That ain't happening.
No, that's not
Amelia.
I've never really been about the science of all of this stuff.
Well, you probably
it's funny because if you looked at my personality and the rest of my life, like in terms of just being an attorney and like a kind of an OCD type of person, you would think that I would be one of those structured people when it comes to athletics.
Right.
But
you're just the opposite because that's your outlet. That's where you can.
Exactly.
You know. So if you go to Tahoe and win another world title, what would that mean to you?
I mean, that would be awesome. I'm not going to lie. It would be, especially after missing last year, I had surgery instead of competing.
What did you hurt? What was it, Spartan related?
I had meniscus. I had to have my knee scoped. It was at a situation where my knee kept, like, I'd have to, like, physically kind of unlock it.
Yeah.
And so it shot any type of uneven terrain. I was like, there's no way I can run this. No,
right.
I was like, believe me, if I could find a way to run it, I would. I mean, it would be awesome. I'm not going to lie, but it would just kind of like, you know, bring things kind of full circle. But at the same time, I'm just going to go out there and have a blast like I always do. And that's all I can ask for. So
when you look at coming back from that injury, and like you said last year, it took a lot of your racing away. So now you've had a great season this year, Were you coming back from that injury? Was that a little scary?
It was really scary because I think the thing that goes through your mind when you take a layoff like that is like, am I ever going to get back to where I was? Because
right.
I had a great season last year and I was, you know, I ran Virginia and Wintergreen and I annihilated the course. I think I came in top 10 overall, including the men. And so then going, that set me up for a month later. I was like, I am feeling really good about Killington.
Yeah.
And so after that kind of layoff, and I think that, you know, knee surgery, and then that kind of led to all kinds of, like, compensatory things coming back when you come back from a break. And so there's always that fear in your mind that you're not going to get it back.
Sure.
You know, that
yeah.
everybody else will have surpassed you. To a certain extent, I don't really know if I'm completely over that yet. You know, I think I still have a little bit of, like, do I still have it type
right.
of thing. So... it's definitely there.
Well, that's pretty natural because you think about it. While you are rehabbing, people are improving.
Right.
You're trying to get
exactly.
back to where you were, and they're going,
right.
we're going to try to get past where Amelia was. So that's
right.
a toughie.
Exactly.
That is tough.
Yes.
Amelia, thank you so much for taking time.
Well, thank you.
Really, really good. A pleasure to get to meet you over the phone, and hopefully I'll see you at a race soon. You're doing great stuff. I love how you represent the sport, the fact that not only a great athlete, but a great ambassador, and out there encouraging brand new people. Because, you know, I think sometimes when you're up front racing, and then later you get to see, you know, somebody actually tearing up at the finish line because they've lost
right.
40 pounds and they've changed
right.
their perception of themselves through this
yeah.
event that sometimes, you know, top end people could take a little for granted that it's just another race day. It's for most mm-hmm. of those people, it's not another race day. It's a day that's going to change them for the better.
Mm-hmm.
Love
exactly.
it. Amelia, thank you so much for all your time.
Thank you.
Again, we are brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, the Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on BabbittVille.com or on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.